from the terrifying tea room at the Regency Hotel. The man responsible for such films as Scanners, Dead Ringers, Existence, The Fly, Videodrome, Spider, Crash, Naked Lunch, and his current movie, A History of Violence. Mr. David Cronenberg, next on The Culture Catch. Converge is the word.
What do I know about directing? That's your business.
No, that's more the cinematography.
Joining me today on The Culture Catch is the Canadian filmmaker David Cronenberg. Welcome to The Culture Catch.
I'm happy to be here.
Looking at your body of work, it's pretty apparent that you're an artist first. You exist kind of outside of the traditional Hollywood studio system. Looking back on your career, has that been a good thing for you?
I don't have that other life to compare it to, you know, and certainly there was a moment in the early 70s when I thought I might have to move to L.A. to get movies made, because there really wasn't much of a film industry in Canada at the time. But I do think it's a good thing, because I think the pressure of the industry in L.A., not that that's the only place you can live, but if you're moving from someplace because of movie making, you're going to end up in L.A., the pressure there... To fit into what is exciting and what is caught and what is current has always been really, really high. That pressure is, you know, when I go to L.A., I find myself reading the trades, you know, I'm reading Variety, the Hollywood Reporter, I'm looking at grosses, I'm doing all that stuff that normally I don't do.
Right.
And it's because it's everywhere. And it's not that it's a sinister thing, but it's there. And everybody's in the business, and everybody's scrambling, and everybody's got projects. And I think what happens then is that you end up becoming a Hollywood filmmaker, even if that's not where your heart is. So that really is. I think that's, therefore, I have to say, I certainly wouldn't have been the filmmaker that I am now if I had moved. And
do you think that the Hollywood system, and this is kind of a general question, because it's so marketing-driven today, doesn't allow for the creative types that we had in the late 60s and the 70s, where you could be an auteur and still get your movies made and then distributed? It seems like the big mega screens or pictures grab all the screens today.
Well, that lasted for about 10 minutes, you know, the era that you're talking about. It was not a very broad era. And of course, part of it was that movies like Easy Rider did make a lot of money.
Right.
And so you could say, in a way, it was just a different kind of marketing that was driving things. As long as movies are made with other people's money, and lots of it, there's going to be a huge marketing consideration. There's no way out of it. It's a strange art form. You know, it's a kind of a weird mix of... It's a super art form because it's music, it's visuals, it's drama, it's acting, it's writing. It can be so many things. And it really... Because the Hollywood template, the model for what a movie is so strong, it has been exported so successfully, it's really hard for people to think that there are other ways to make movies besides that. I mean, people, for example, a movie of mine like Crash, a lot of people didn't even think it was a movie.
Right.
It's not even a real movie, because it doesn't move and walk and talk and resolve itself and draw the emotional things that the way that a normal Hollywood movie does. So that template is very, it's powerful, and it has produced some wonderful movies, but it's also in a way destructive, because it prevents people from understanding that there are so many things that movies can do that they haven't been doing very often.
Now, you talked about this last night with Spider, and I also read this online. You deferred your payment to get the movie made.
Yes.
And a lot of directors who are in your position may not do that. If they maybe were, you know, playing into the Hollywood system, they may say, well, are you kidding me? You know?
Well, it depends. It's such a personal thing. I mean, it really depends on why you're making movies. If you're making movies because you're as so many young people are now, they're not inspired by the guys that inspired me, like Bergman and Fellini. You know, they're not looking. They don't have anything to say. They really don't have. They're not looking for personal expression. They want to be directors. They want the heat, the excitement, and they don't really care what they're directing, as long as it's going to give them that. That's one way of doing it. It's not. It's not a sinister thing. It's just that it's a different thing. So if that's the kind of movie maker you are, then in Hollywood, you know, how much money you get for directing is a measure of your worth. If that's how you, that's the yardstick, you know, if you're getting $6 million to direct a movie, you're that kind of director. And if suddenly somebody says, for this movie you have to get $200,000 or it won't get made, well, that's a crucial sort of a character testing point. You know, do you do that, or do you say no? That's an insult. You know, I'm a $6 million guy. The next movie's got to be seven.
Well, that's also the distinction you can make for any art form. Are you an artist first, or are you a slave to the pop culture?
Yeah.
You know, I guess well, musicians could say the same thing. Do you need a big record deal, or can you make a small, wonderful album?
Well, even, I mean, I once did a short little film, like a three-minute filler for the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, called Letter from Michelangelo. And it was a letter, I shot marble at Pietro Santo, which is an Italian quarry. You know, it's a place where you quarry marble, and Michelangelo got a lot of his marble there. Just shots of the marble, and over it I had an actor reading a letter from Michelangelo, and he's complaining and bitching about money, about the Pope commissioned a statue, then the Pope died, and the new Pope doesn't want to pay for it, and he, Michelangelo, is stuck with the cost of the marble. What's he going to do with this Pope statue that nobody wants? Things haven't changed, you know. There's always a money problem.
Yeah, you could ask who came first, the artists or the patrons.
It's a sort of an organic process, and all things converge. You can't really obsess about one aspect of it to the detriment of all the others. I mean, you basically have to accept. You have to know what the game is you're playing, and you have to then you can play it as well as you can. But it is always a game, and there's always those elements in it. You know, it can either depress you or exhilarate you, depending on what kind of personality you have.
Depending on the project.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned something last night that I thought was very clever. One of your producers is prone to putting blurbs in the trade publications about movies you may have had a casual discussion about
in
order to maybe facilitate a deal in another country
to get them
produced.
Yes. I appreciate those kind of things. I mean, it puts you in an awkward position because years later, as people are saying, whatever happened to David Cronenberg's Frankenstein? And I'm saying, I never agreed to do it. But a producer got excited about just those words, you know, and tried to start selling the movie before I'd agreed to do one. Independent producing is rough, you know, and it's rougher, I suppose. It's different from studio producing. And it means that you have to be very aggressive if you're going to do it. And you have to be very crafty. And you have to be very obstinate, you know. So I kind of appreciate these crazy moments when a producer will do something like that. Even as I say, it puts me in an awkward position sometimes.
You talked about another project that, and this is something that I found, I had no idea, your other passion, which is racing and the need for speed, to quote a very bad movie line. How did that develop? Was that something you had early on in conjunction with filmmaking, or did one come before the other?
I think I was very much into cars long before I thought of myself as a movie maker. I thought I would be a novelist, so I always thought I would be doing something creative. But I also was very obsessed with cars. And my mother said I had a little red tricycle that I never got off for like 3 years. I wouldn't get off it. I would eat on it. I would, you know. So it came naturally to me to be interested in car and motorcycle racing, and once I got to a certain age, I started to do it as much as I could afford it, which was not. That's another thing where the art of racing and the money is very big, and those are always those are controversies too. You know, you get Formula One racers. They say, well, he joined that team just for the money, but he should have stayed with his old team where he got less money because he would have won the championships. You see, so even in sport, obviously there are those talent versus money considerations. But I've always been interested in auto racing and motorcycle racing, and I still am. I watch it all the time. I raced, I guess up until maybe 5 years ago, I was
really?
Still racing. Yeah, vintage yeah. vintage cars, you know, it's like old guys racing old cars.
The old MGs and the...
No, in this case, they were Cooper Formula One cars.
Formula Ones, okay.
Yeah, people think of Cooper as Mini Cooper, but
right.
in fact, they were Formula One champions.
Right. And now the red car...
Red Cars.
Yeah, the Red Cars project. That was based on the 61 championship?
Yeah, that was Phil Hill winning the championship for Ferrari in 61. It's a really interesting era. And Ferrari, of course, is a very charismatic character. And Phil Hill's teammate was a German count, Count Wolfgang von Trips, who was actually born in a castle and raised in a castle. Very obviously an aristocrat, playboy. As opposed to Phil Hill, who was a kind of Santa Monica boy, very neurotic and very obsessive and mm-hmm. definitely not a playboy. Anyway, it was a lovely era, and I wrote a script that I was very happy with, but couldn't not get it made for various reasons. But it has been made into a book. If you go to redcars.it, redcars, one word,
right.
.it for Italy, you can see the beautiful art book that took 2 years to make that an Italian publisher wanted to make out of base. It's my script plus.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's the script plus. It has aluminum covers like the aluminum engines that
right.
Ferraris have. And photos from Ferrari archives and so on. It's almost like a visual version of what the script would have been if the actual characters were playing the roles. And it's very interesting, and you can see some of that online.
Have you ever looked at things like the Japanese Akira series or Watchmen mm-hmm. or the Alan Moore series?
I haven't. I've only dipped my toe into graphic novels, and it's obvious that it's a thriving art form, and that it can be like any other. It could be sort of tacky and obvious, or it
right.
could be quite interesting and quite
right.
extreme. And I have no doubt that there must be very good work being done. But it's not something that I really feel that I know too much about. And it's interesting because History of Violence, I still feel that I haven't done an adaptation of a graphic novel because I literally didn't know that the screenplay that I first wrote for that movie was based on a graphic novel. Nobody told me. And so for ages and ages, we were developing the script with no reference to the novel at all.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, you said that oftentimes you'll utilize a willing ignorance in making a movie that you don't want to be, again, going back to Spider, that informed about the subject matter, so you're looking at it from a different perspective.
Yes. It really depends on the project. I mean, you can... Spider was a very specific thing because it could have become a kind of dissertation on schizophrenia. And I didn't want it to be that. I didn't want it to be a clinical study of a disease. So I was not wanting to confine the character or the plot or anything to what was understood about schizophrenia at the time. Itself a very controversial subject.
And the other story you related to that was you were getting all of the wonderful accolades from fellow directors and filmmakers who... Just because of the lack of screen time, the movie never afforded the big release that it probably should have been afforded.
Yeah.
You know, they were seeing it months and months later.
Yeah, well, that's the way it goes. I mean, once again, sort of awards and Oscars are, it's a game. It's a game with specific dynamics, and it requires money to play that game to a certain extent, even just to get everybody who votes for the Oscars to see your movie costs money. And so that if you don't have that kind of support for your movie, it's very unlikely that you're going to get nominations and win things. But, you know, it's not a tragedy. That's not what movie making is about. It's a nice thing if it happens. Many winners of Oscars could say very straightforwardly, it's a lottery. You know, it's a crapshoot.
Mm.
It's who you're up against that year, and who likes you, and who met you, and who knew you, and who happened to see the movie. You know, all of those things. So, it's not a real measure of your worth, let's say, as an artist.
And you're in the middle of it now, lobbying with History of Violence.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, New Line has been supporting the movie because they think it has Oscar potential, whatever that means. We did get very good critical support, and I think that was the key. So. But whether that will result in anything or not, I don't know.
You'll just keep going on.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to derail me in one way or the other.
Right. Great directors can bring out career-defining moments in their actors. Are there any that come to your mind that you really felt like maybe going in you weren't certain that they could deliver what you were looking for and they just came through with flying colors, or they just maybe surprised you at... Or did you know just casting them that they were going to give you what you needed?
Well, you never totally know. I mean, I have gone on record as saying that I knew Viggo was good, but I didn't know he was that good. He did surprise me. But I expected big things from him, having seen a lot of his movies and met him and talked to him and so on. That's one of the joys of movie making, is that you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it could be bad, but if you have experience and if you're crafty and you're careful, there's a more likely chance that it will be good, better than you expect. I do my research. You know, casting is a very interesting thing. I've often called it a black art. It's a combination of, yes, there's money considerations. Can you afford the actor? Also, is the actor enough of a star to support a film of the budget that you've got? You know, that kind of thing. Even if you're just making a $1 million indie film, you have to get casting. You know, you can't have non-entities in the movie. If you do... the marketing of that film, getting the money or just getting the money together for the film is very difficult. So I think we're going to have to... I think I've got something happening at another meeting at 2:30. So
we got to.
It's 25. It's 20 after. So
do we have 10? Can we go right up to that time, or do you need time?
No, because I have to go back to my room.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Do we have five more minutes, or do
a couple more minutes?
You explore the darker recesses of the human psyche. What freaks you out?
I'm not really freaked out, pretty much. You know, I mean, I think that the things that worry me are the same, are pretty common. You know, I've got children, I've got a grandchild. You worry about them, you worry about their safety, about their health, about their state of mind. You know, it's pretty ordinary human stuff. I don't have any really exotic fears. I'm not a very fearful person, particularly, or paranoid either, actually.
Really?
No.
Good for you. I guess then one final question. With all the convergence of media that's happening now, do you think maybe the new wave of filmmakers will be these DIY kids will be making movies for smaller devices? Everything seems to be converging down to this Dick Tracy size medium, and you know, the big studios will have the big screens, and then everyone else will be left to their own device.
Well, I don't know how it's all going to shake down, but it was very interesting. I mean, many years ago, Jean-Luc Godard said there can never be cinema verite, le camera stylo, the camera pen, until you can fit a camera in the glove compartment of your car. Well, we're at that stage right now.
Yeah.
And and of course the blossoming of different media outlets is phenomenal. So I think it's pretty interesting. I mean, there will definitely be, and already have been, a whole new level of filmmaking type activities, you still have to have talent. You know, I mean, everybody pretty much in a literate society can write and has access to a computer or a typewriter. It doesn't necessarily mean everybody's going to be a great novelist. But the accessibility of the technology is really a critical thing.
It's leveled the playing field. Anyone can make anything.
Yes.
If they have the talent. And finally, what advice do you have for the young filmmaker today?
I ask them to stop making films because it's a threat to me. That's my advice. Just stop, okay? Forget it. Go into accounting. That's what I suggest.
Don't steal his thunder, please.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't steal his thunder. You know, Jill Hennessy is a mutual acquaintance of ours.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Jill was in one of my early bands in New York in the 80s and said she was going to quit to become an actress, and we went, yeah, good luck.
Yeah, well, she did it.
She did it.
Yeah.
She and her sister were in Dead Ringers.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Okay.
All right.
I have to go.
David, thank you for being on the Culture Kitchen.
Now, the demise of this.
This episode of Culture Catch was brought to you by Final Draft, the industry standard number one selling script writing software for movies, television, and stage plays. And now Final Draft AV, the only multi-column script writing software for podcasts, videocasts, commercials, DV shorts, documentaries, you name it. And our host, WebHSP, for all of your web hosting needs, it's webhsp.com. And our new friends north of the border, Liberty Boots. For the coolest cowboy boots on the planet, visit www.libertybootco.com. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. We'll see you soon. Converge is the word.